Two.
Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachians. Our AccuWindow forecast, 48 degrees, and Mars is out tonight. The solar wind is up to 347.5 kilometers per second. A spectacular eruption is underway on the sun. SOHO is tracking a bright coronal mass ejection billowing upward from the vicinity of the sun's north pole. Also looking for Jupiter? Don't. Today, the giant planet is only a fraction of a degree from the blinding sun. Astronomers call such a close encounter a solar conjunction. Human eyes can't see the event. Mars, however, is bright and red and was next to the moon last night. Sunspot 1051 poses no threat for flares and is tracking peacefully across the sun. Tonight is the night of the snow moon. Check its silvery brightness out after the program. Egypt's culture ministry says a team of Egyptian and European archaeologists has unearthed a large head made of red granite of an ancient pharaoh who ruled Egypt some 3,400 years ago. A ministry statement Sunday said the team discovered the head of Amenhotep III, wearing the traditional white crown of the southern kingdom, buried in the pharaoh's mortuary temple on the west bank of the Nile in the southern city of Luxor. What are they doing out there in the desert with that heavy equipment anyway? There were a staggering 65 earthquakes in the world today, with 45 of them over 5.0 and two of them over 6.0. Wow. The whole world is ringing like a bell today. Our condolences to Chile and all their devastation. If you have been rocked by an earthquake tonight, you might go ahead and call on the program just let us know what's going on out there. Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the head of the International Monetary Fund, suggested Friday the organization might one day be called on to provide countries with a global reserve currency that would serve as an alternative to the U.S. dollar. The challenge ahead is to find ways to limit the tension arising from the high demand for precautionary reserves on the one hand and the narrow supply of reserves on the other. Gee, I have that problem at the end of every month. Several countries, including China and Russia, have called for an alternative to the dollar as a reserve currency. No ulterior motives there. And have suggested using the IMF's International Accounting Unit. Nothing like using the bank to leverage a currency that makes more sense to them. By the way, if you want to learn more about how that is done and how that is going to occur, all you have to do is pick up Volume 2 of The Arc of Millions of Years at arcofmillionsofyears.com, and you can read all about it, how it's going to unfold. We have often talked of time travel on this program. We have discussed the physics of the soul and even delved into the relationship of quantum principles and viewpoints as it relates to both subjects. We have never had a guest who is prepared to talk about all of these from fresh perspectives. The book is The Holographic Canvas, and the author is Sonia Barrett, and she's with us tonight. Welcome to the program, Sonia.
Well, thank you so much. I am absolutely honored and delighted to be here with you on your wonderful program.
Well, we appreciate it. X Squared Radio has a very eclectic and, I think, elite listening audience. And it could be made of listeners from other more famous programs, but might I say that our listeners are the cream of the crop, the ones who enjoy the deeper scientific aspects and less the broadcaster viewpoint of things, and also the wonderful absence of commercials on this program. We go about 55 minutes straight each hour, and thus provide you, the author, the guest, a full chance to tell your whole story, even the things that were in between the lines in your book. And many of us get glimpses of an idea that the world as we know it might not be real. How did you begin your exploration into the idea that life might be a kind of holographic game?
Well, let's see. In the very beginning, even when I went through my curious, or started my real deep curiosity stage, I really didn't know that. So that didn't come first. I didn't know that it was holographic or that it wasn't real. What I realized was that I needed to find out about the whole concept of God. That's really, you know, how it started for me from since childhood. So I needed to understand that, you know, and growing up in the church, and there was so much fear around the idea of God, and, you know, it just seemed very cruel. There were just so many things in the Bible that just seemed very, it just didn't seem like it was very loving. So that's kind of how my curiosity began from way back when, and then, of course, over the years, in the 90s, early 90s, and moving forward, I remember distinctly one day, after everything that I had been dealing with, you know, meditation, focus, just really bringing in what I would consider at the time to be very empowering information. One day I woke up and realized, oh, my God, none of this is what we would call real. I mean, it was just, boom, hit me on the head. It wasn't, you know, gradual and I'm noticing. No, it was one day I got up and that hit me. Then it took me a week or so to really absorb that idea. So that's really kind of how that happened for me. So I built into that moment, and then from that moment on, the exploration got even deeper, and I started to understand and see more.
Well, what did you find as you began to stretch yourself out there into the maelstrom of all knowledge that's out there to pick up? I understand that you did not, you know, make a trip to the library and read what everyone else has written on the subject. You went directly to source. How was that experience for you?
Well, that was a conscious choice for me, and I must say, in 92 or 93, going through divorce and a very, you know, severe relationship, I decided I needed to understand more about the whole 14 years of what I had experienced, along with everything else. It was an opportunity for me to go forth and to start really understanding my whole reason for existing and being here. So in the very beginning, those first few, within that year, I would say, I read Shirley MacLaine, Out on a Limb, and I remember I read book 2 of Masters of the Far East. And I did go through my Bible. And the reason why I did that is because, coming from a church background as a child, it was, okay, well, let me just pick up this Bible one more time, go through it, and see what everybody's really talking about. Let me see here if there's some things that I'm missing. And then I decided to set the books. That was it. And then I said, okay, what I want now is I know that there is a way for me to understand and to know, whatever questions or the answers that I need, there's a way for me to get those. And I want it directly from source. Now, what was interesting was, at the time, even though I had moved away from the whole idea of the church, the idea about this character in the Bible, Jesus, and I thought, okay, if such a character existed and this character was able to do these things, then if that be the case, then I should certainly be able to do this. That was honestly my thinking. I should certainly be able to do these things. So I set everything down. I didn't want to hear it from anybody. Didn't even know there were workshops or anything of that nature. So I didn't do, it was nothing like that. So I set out to understand, figure out how to meditate. And that started it for me because there was nothing to look at. There was nobody to ask. And I just knew that I sat on the floor and I started, day in, day out, on and on for I don't know how long until that feeling, that inner part of me slowly started to guide me because of my persistency in terms of this whole concept of meditation. And that eventually started to open a door for me where it was taking me beyond time and space as I knew it in terms of my physical world, what I had been observing for what I would call my life here on the planet up until that moment. So that's what happened, and I pierced the veil, and it was over a period of time of trusting what I was feeling and what I would call downloading and writing. And I make a distinct difference from channeling. I don't even think I knew anything about the whole idea of channeling. So I wasn't channeling. That was, I think, honestly, yes, that was another very aware statement that I also made as I went on. That was not what I was about. I needed to access the information from everything that existed. And that's what I came to understand is that, so everything is encoded with the knowledge of creation itself, of everything. Everything is everything, so everything has to have the information of everything in it, including the air that I'm breathing, all the gases, everything. And so that's where I started to go into that space and started to make those discoveries, and I started writing things that I didn't understand because I'd never taken a physics class. I didn't even know about quantum physics per se. I don't remember that I even knew about that. I hadn't engaged in that wording as yet. So I was writing things, and I didn't even understand some of the stuff that I was writing at the time. And gradually over a period of time, yes, then I started to understand more and more and more, and I started trusting more and more of what I was writing and understanding. Then I would get led to different things would jump out at me. I might be walking by a bookstore or wherever I am, something would jump out that would confirm what I was now understanding and what I was now writing. And that's kind of, the biggest part as to how the rest of it started to unfold for me.
Well, just so I can put this in perspective and some for myself and some for those people who at the end of a 3-day workshop still don't get it. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you I really appreciate the fact that you questioned everything. You questioned the scriptures that you had been handed. You questioned the characters that you may or may not have been indoctrinated to believe in. You even questioned or at least considered the gases that we breathe and your relationship with these, quote, higher beings that have existed and laid down philosophies and teachings and religions and doctrines for us over the millennia. How long did it take you before you really started to put words together that you thought one day, oh, you know what, I have enough for a book here? How long was that time?
Oh, geez. Maybe 5 years. And then it took another 5 years to actually finish the book. So it was like 10 years.
Well, there
total
you go.
Of 10 years.
You know, that 10 years, that sounds like a more than reasonable struggle. At least a quest. So,
right.
You know, those of you that have had an epiphany or one day you went to church and your preacher just didn't look quite as regal as he did when you first joined and you start questioning things, it isn't going to come together for you in a 3-day workshop or a summer, okay? You're going to have to do some explorations. And one of the nice things I like about what you said in your preparatory comments here is that you did a lot of meditating. Now, one of the things that all of the prophets and all of the sages of the past has told us, one of those things is to pray always, or to meditate, mm-hmm. or to at least consider your ways. You know, don't go charging, you know, through life at a full gallop and then trying to figure out where you're going to go. And I think that's where the true knowledge comes. That's where the true consideration comes and these epiphanies. And don't be afraid of the answers that you get is, I think, what you're telling us. Because
right.
what we're going to discuss tonight over the next 3 hours, if you're a scientist, it's probably going to change your outlook a little bit. And if you're a new ager, it's probably going to change your outlook a little bit. Because Sonia's done a very effective job at creating a scientific spiritual book that blends everything together from a fresh point of view. So one of the first things I'd like to start with, I like the idea that we view our human bodies as ships for our souls. Does each soul only use one body?
You're talking in a particular Earth experience, like right now, for example, is an individual, is a possibility that they're sharing it with someone else? Is that what you mean? In a particular
I think there are two questions here. One is, you know, do we get one body in one lifetime, or do we get multiple
bodies? Oh, is that what you're saying? Oh, no. I don't see that at all. I don't see that it's just one lifetime and that's it. And, you know, you do what you do with it, and then that's the end. It didn't seem very fair to me, and when you look at how there are people that feel as if, you know, they're, as they call it, good people, and then this other person is what you call a bad person, but nobody gets a chance to redeem themselves. It just didn't seem to make any sense to me. And then, of course, I started to really examine all of this even further and really started to recognize even more about the idea of past, present, and future existing simultaneously, and how much we're actually moving around in what we call time or no time. It's the consciousness that's doing all this traveling and not really confined to this space that we recognize as our static reality. That's what I came to realize, is just how much jumping around we're actually doing. But because of how we are taught, just because of our programming, we tend to recognize the reality that is visible to us, or that we're conscious of at that moment, as final, as the only one. But what I've done is I have posed questions or made statements to other people that actually had to admit these things that have happened. And I think we have to learn how to pay attention to the things that happen to us and not just brush them off. And one of the things that I like to mention is many of those moments in many situations. For example, I use the analogy of situation of washing dishes, or you could even be washing the car or doing something like that, and suddenly you have this realization that you're like back. You're back from somewhere, but you don't, you know, you scratch your head, but you feel as if some time has definitely been lost. But you can't really figure it out, so we don't really hold on to that idea for too long. We just kind of shrug our shoulders and kind of go on with our, you know, with whatever it is we're doing. But you get glimpses of those moments that are, you realize that you have to be somewhere else, or you get a sense in you, or sometimes images in your mind's eye, of having maybe been sitting on the couch as opposed to being in the kitchen when you thought you were in the kitchen the whole time, but then you're thinking, why do I feel like I was out there? So these are things that happen, I think, to basically everyone, but because of how our programming, based on religion, based on so many things, we don't hold on to it and we don't completely examine it and we don't talk about it because people just, you know, think you're crazy and you brush it off. But all of these things are showing us the fluidity of who we are and that it's not really these bodies per se, but it is the consciousness, it is the essence that really is in this vehicle that is really doing the exploring in various pockets of, you know, of time. So if you jump back to the year, you know, 1825, would you realize that you actually jump back to the year 1825? Probably not, but while you're in that moment, that would be your conscious reality at that moment. And we see this with hypnosis. We see this where people go under hypnosis, and whatever the point they travel back to, it's very real for them. And we can't really say that in those moments when they are experiencing or seeing these things happening from a past that they're not really actually there, even though their bodies are very much in our mind's eye, or as our brains are showing us, their bodies are still here. But how do we know that those people that they may engage in that hypnotic state aren't recognizing them as there in that moment? I hope that makes sense. I'm trying to show the traveling around that we're doing.
You know, what's more real, standing there mundanely washing dishes, looking out the kitchen window at the grass growing, or, you know, running up and down the beach of the Caribbean and listening to the waves crash? Now, do you have to return and kick the Cayman sand out of the cuffs of your pants to think that it was real? No, probably not, but the question, the deeper question is which is now? Is the now standing there washing the dishes in your physical body, or is the now at that same moment, not a moment in the past or the future, just a different place, experiencing the sea breeze of the Mediterranean while, you know, scrunching your toes in the sands of the promenade in Jaffa?
That's the now. All of it is the now, when that's what you're experiencing. That's the now. That's the now. Because all we have are these moments. It's just one endless moment, actually. Just, you know, this eternal now. But for the sake of the experiencing physical reality as we know it, we have to quantify. We have to, we've come up with, you know, what we call, you know, various measurement. We're measuring distance. We're doing a lot of quantifying in order to have the experience of time, because the whole idea of time is allowing us to appear to lock in long streams or long moments or hold on to moments that we measure as 2 and 3 and 4 and 10 hours or whatever the case may be, or a million years.
That's right.
We're locking in that stream, but that does not mean that out beyond that quantifying is actually, you know, actually exists, is actually relevant. But it is so that we can have that, the experience of those segmented moments, of an absorption of that moment.
Well, let's see if we can delve into this a little bit. We'll lay some groundwork here. First of all, is there more to the human DNA than meets the genome project?
I believe so, and I see that with the confusion about junk DNA. I think, you know, all of those things are saying to you that there is more to this. There, you know, these are DNA is what we call a program, like a computer. You have these various codes and you know, I guess program streams that lay dormant. And I compare it to purchasing a software, purchasing a program, and you don't know how to use all of it. Like Nero, I use maybe like 3 or 4 things in Nero to edit, but I don't know what those other 200 things are, so I don't use them. And so it's the same thing with how these vessels, these vehicles, these unique biogenetic vehicles are designed. They are designed to be activated to various, I think, you know, many, many levels beyond our conception, what we can even imagine. And I just think that they are only turned on to a certain point. And the DNA holds a lot of those codes, you know, waiting to be unlocked by the individual. I don't think we need to wait on a group to unlock ourselves. And
yeah.
I think that's a misconception.
Well, do you think that there's something out there, there's something coming that will switch on some of these latent abilities if we're ready? Or you think we're nearing a place in the galaxy where new frequencies are coming in and it's a, sort of a regular thing that this Earth goes through as part of its precessional travels that can affect the DNA, and thus it's just sort of laying there as a repeated and kind of stored program ready to switch on with the right stimulus?
I think, yeah, that's partly true, no doubt, because our entire system, the universe and, you know, all that is associated with our experience is operating on cycles. And that's what we have to recognize, that it's the cycles. The cycles, they kick in different themes, different evolutionary changes are locked into to these various cycles as we, you know, go through these different changes, these different cycles. And yes, I do believe that human beings have an opportunity to move through certain levels of evolution as these cycles come around, all these various cycles come around. But I do also see where the individual has to really be the one that goes through, you know, activates or has a desire to activate. I think there's only a certain level of activation that occurs collectively, you know, based on the cyclic shift. And the reason I feel for that is because we cannot escape the fact that even though we are one, everything is ultimately one, and we are one, but the one has created the illusion of individuality so that each individual creates a unique experience and a unique process of turning on itself. Now, the individual still represents the whole, and that's the part that we don't really recognize. The individual still represents the whole. So it's not that you are necessarily breaking away in a sense and trying to be so separate. You still represent the whole, and you can create a ripple of change in your reality, in what you as an individual perceive reality to be. So this whole thing is such a very trippy process, and we see scientists looking at that and seeing that even more. As quantum physics states, you can't observe something without changing it. Now, there's a lot of things that are contradictory, because if we're saying that, then although we operate as a collective, and we are all agreeing on a particular observation, a particular set of visuals, particular set of experiences, it doesn't mean then that as an individual that you don't have your own separate perception of what reality looks like for you. I don't know if you and I are seeing red in the same manner. We probably think that we are, but I don't know that we're seeing red or blue in the same manner. So my point is that the individual has the capability to unlock the individual self, and based on the level of your perception, based on how expansive your perception is, that is what is going to determine what reality begins to look like for you. Now, because of that, it doesn't mean that you're going to stand in a world by yourself. Everything
right.
is changing around you because of you and your perception. So we don't, you know what I mean? It's so many intriguing realizations that I've come to that. To me, it became very freeing. I couldn't lock myself in anymore, because I see how reality is just moving in this fluid form, and that it's showing itself to me as I am able to allow myself, my perception, to expand, and I don't put a judgment on it, and I don't put a limitation on what it can be or what it can't be. That's where we get caught. Because when we say
right.
it can only be this thing, then that's all that you're going to see. And then we struggle with each other to get the other person to conform to what you think reality looks like.
Right, right. I mean, it's like you're saying, it's, you know, our perception, which in science we call this the observation, our observation.
The observer.
You know,
mm-hmm.
is how we're interpreting the world, but because we are observing this set of energies we call the reality, we are affecting it at the same time. And,
right.
you know, I speak to a lot of people around the conference circuits who talk about ascended masters, and gosh, I don't know how many websites address this. It's probably uncountable.
Mm-hmm.
I like your take on the presence of these enlightened beings. Who are they?
Mm-hmm.
Who are
they?
You're
the asking me the question.
Who are the
Are you asking me the question?
Masters?
Well, it is very interesting. Who are they? I remember a few years ago when I came out talking about some of this. I know that there are a lot of people that probably may have been a little put off about it. But what we call ascended masters, well, first of all, there are two different concepts here. There is such a thing as one who is simply ascending into the many levels of what the potentials are as a human being. And I think that's what we have to come to first and foremost, is to take all that other fantasy, fluffy stuff off of that whole idea of everything being so much greater than us, and nothing, you know, we're not worthy of anything, but, you know, somebody else is worthy. No, we are what I call stage one human beings. In our limited view on our limitations, then, the things that we still aren't able to do, like, you know, we're not strong in telepathy yet, and what are some of the other things? Many of the other scientific things that we should be able to do. I can't think of the words, some of the things right now, but telepathy is one, teleportation is one. These, to me, are things that are normal and natural. What I see an ascended master, if you call an ascended master, is one who is mastering or has mastered levels of this this matter reality that we think that we are stuck in. That's what I would see as an ascended master, one who is ascending into unlimited levels of what we could potentially be as a human being. And then that goes back to turning these vehicles on. What we have come to deal with now are there are other beings out there. There are other forces out there. This is a very competitive reality universe to some degree. And there are forces out there who are not really ascended, as we say. And ascension for me involves one taking one's body does not go through the process of death. It does not go through the decay process, because the body is evolving with the science of what is possible. It's becoming fluid, and it's going through a cycle of movement as you shift in consciousness. So I think some of these beings did not ascend per se as we think that they did, and are also limited on some levels, but on other levels they are more aware than we are. They just don't have the physical body or have access to a physical body, and so there are controlling factors that come about with the kindergarten level of human beings and what we understand. And so I think there are levels of manipulation that do occur, like a game, playing a game with a child. And I think there are those who have truly possibly shifted into that state and are not engaging in that in that manner. We, however, have been taught to become dependent on some other kind of force out there that is looking out for humanity. And they provide amazing information. But what is challenging with that is, as the information is amazing, it's very easy to slide other things in there, and you would not know that it's being slid in there, because you're so confident in the other information. You're not even trying to become a direct download for yourself. And that's what I see with a lot of these people. They've become very dependent and ego-filled based on the fact that they can say to hundreds of people, this is who I, you know, this is who I channel, and they're looked at these really, wow, you channel this being? And so everybody gets hooked into this net. In the meantime, that one who is being channeled is being, his or her existence is being validated through
right.
the people, and it's an energy drain that is occurring for everyone, and everyone is remaining in a limited state because you're too busy listening, hoping that they tell you what to do next. To me, that's not an ascended one. An ascended one, one who gets it, does not encourage that kind of play.
Right. Well, what's wrong with our educational system? I mean, these sound like eternal and irrefutable principles. Why isn't this idea of ascended ones or ascended masters, or the idea that we can reach ascension, why isn't this taught to our youth? Why is it held back from our educational systems?
What are you talking, traditional educational systems?
It well, yeah, I mean, that's in our country, most students are either going to get homeschooled or they're going to go to public school.
Well, we're
and,
not going to do that.
You know, be in the public system, they're not going to learn that they're individuals, that they have the ability to rise above this reality that government has made
control.
For us.
It's about control. And as I said before, there's a competitive level. And most importantly, let's recognize that this reality is really based strongly on the survival program and validation of one's existence. Control allows, for those who enjoy controlling, it allows them to validate their existence and, of course, continue the game. So why would you want to empower when you yourself are having a challenge with reaching a certain level as well. You don't want the others to. If you can continue to try to maybe figure it out yourself, but let's keep the rest of the sheeples in this certain state. And this is going on the same level that you just mentioned. You talked about with the ascended, you know, masters, or those that we are calling ascended masters. If human beings, if everybody were to just awaken to who they are and this possibility, it would affect many things. It would affect many things for those who are in that space of needing to control or to have their existence validated. You wouldn't worship anybody anymore. That's one. That would destroy a lot for many forces who need the energy feed off of the worship that is received. Remember, everything is nothing but energy anyway, and everything is being fed by energy in some form or another. Just like a performer needs the applause of the audience, they feed off of that. It's a charge. So we have to look at everything from an energetic standpoint and what is really being achieved energy-wise from basically all that we do. And so now our children aren't being taught anything of that nature. You would have too many free thinkers, too many free minds, and on this level, which is run by what I call the matrix on this level, which is the governmental, corporate/religious structure, it is necessary to teach people how to comply and how to operate according to the design of this particular system of limitation that keeps the game going, where one expires from this reality and just continues to return into the same game format. Hopefully, you know, each time one makes some sort of return, you have expanded in awareness to some degree, where one eventually begins to figure it out that there's something loopy here. I'm being looped through again, and I need to get beyond this level of the game. But it's a massive playing field, and we have to really look at that. And we have to educate our children.
Let me ask you a question about the construct of the game. Did somebody, you know, write in the script, you know, in 2010, you know, Sonya on February 28th is going to be on X Squared Radio, reaching thousands and thousands of people around the world, and that's going to change everything? And, I mean, is all this teleologically laid out for us step by step, and it's... we do it over and over again till we get it right? Is it a script of some kind?
You know, to some degree, to some degree there is a script. There is what I call a blueprint for what it is to be a human being. There's a general blueprint, and in the workshop I just did and still completing, it says that human beings are a program, meaning the idea of a human itself is like a written program into an experience that we call Earth or life here on Earth at this time. It's like, so there's a specific blueprint written for a human being, and in that blueprint, from that blueprint, there's a design taken from that blueprint for a human being. However, all of the components of the blueprint were not necessarily included in the design of the human. But that is the prize, is for the human being to be able to come awaken into a realization and then activate all those many aspects that are there that were not included in the design, kind of like the software analogy that I gave. And then at that point, when you look at how things are happening, again, the cycles is what brings the themes for each level of evolution, and that's why there's such hype about 2012 right now. So in essence, there is sort of a script which would be like a theme for each leg, each level of this, each next phase of it. And each of us have our own specific, blueprint in a sense for each life that we're in. Like you have a specific journey, you know, in coming into this reality as to how limited you will be in this reality or how expansive you will be in this pocket of time as we know it, as you and I are engaging in. And you have an opportunity to begin to step it up from there and to begin to rewrite the script. The script is, however, very, very tricky because, I'm trying to see where to begin with this to simplify it. Okay, everything does operate, as I said, on a almost like a, to some degree, a pre-written. There's a level of this that's pre-written. Even though you're making your own choices and you're doing all these things, what we don't realize is the program streams that each one of us is connected to based on our bloodline, based on our ancestral programs, based on a number of things, and that's how astrology comes in, and that's why you're born at a specific time according to the program stream of that particular moment in time of the lineup of the planets and what that particular period represents. So there are some specifics according to that you came in at that time, you know, according to the journey that you were going to take. All right, so you see where some of these things seem to be a little preset, and so your choices are tied to all of those ancestral programs because everything is based on data. Everything about the line that you're connected with, the bloodline that you're connected with, all of those, that data collected through that stream that you're coming in from is all part of your genes and your DNA, it's all in there. What we don't see is how the choices that we end up making in our lives, how they are really tied to things beyond what we would probably say time and space, because all these streams are coming in from way beyond what we can even perceive. But this is where it gets interesting. What I started to see was that is the case, yes, but is there ever a point where one can actually step outside of all of that and begin to really be in an authentic space of making authentic choices? And that's where all of this becomes very, very tricky, because now you will need to understand and see all of the things that I'm talking about, how all your choices and everything about your life, how, you know, everything is data, gathered data. You're just a walking data stream. It's just a walking data stream, transmitter and receiver. But when you start to understand more about who you are, how this whole thing is designed, like a giant computerized system, you can start to transcend those programs. You start to be able to activate aspects of you, and you start to move beyond the concept of what I call a stage one human being, which is a human with very limited power. You know, we start stepping outside of that, worshiping of any other being, and all of that starts to completely shift. You start to move into recognizing your equalness to those who, yes, are more in touch and aware of what their powers are. So there are what we would call gods, but these are simply beings who are not operating from the space of limitation that we are. These are beings that are operating on various levels in creation that stand about, you know, creating a universe and a planet. These are aspects
of consciousness. We'll get more into that in the later hours, but what I want to cover here is, while we're building this foundation for the next 2 hours, in this program we've discussed the idea of, for instance, entanglement of molecules and energy, and I know we're going to get deeper into this as well later in the program, but I want to discuss the interaction of the Earth with humans for a while. For us, we see this interface at the point at which we eat food. We take in Earth, We put it inside our bodies, and we build the molecules, the biological parts that make our body from proteins and cellulose and minerals from the earth. What is wrong with the way humans consume food these days?
What is wrong with the way they consume food these days?
You mentioned in your book that we're preparing food all wrong, that we're ruining the food, and somehow we're not getting the best benefit out of it, and thus we're hurting the ship, the body in which we're carrying our soul around the earth, and it may impede us for what we need to feel and what we need to be capable of doing with this body.
Yeah, well, the thing with that whole aspect is that the food has an effect on our bodies, what we take in. But the only reason why it does is because of the space that we are in. That is because of where we are in our awareness, in our consciousness. That's really why we are so affected by what we eat. Because what we have to remember is what we take in is really fuel. It's you're eating, you know, you're eating energy. It's like with the green foods and those things that are natural, you're eating trapped sunlight. When I used to teach lymphology, that's what I would say. Remember, that's what you're doing. You're eating trapped sunlight. And so when we are stressed or when we are extremely limited in our thinking, we are more affected by what we eat because the body is the one that is having to deal with the processing of it. You, the greater aspect of you, is completely disengaged because you are not conscious of that part of it. You're not really even trying to be deeply in touch with that aspect of it. So what the body is living off of are programs. And so with that, what you put in, the body takes it in and tries to convert it to fuel because the consciousness, that level of awareness, is not there to supersede the kind of energy that is coming in from the food. And most of what we eat is obviously what we would call, you know, dead. It has really basically no life force in it. And we cook our food, you know, to, like, overcook it, anything over 118 degrees, it changes and creates a byproduct from the food, which then affects the essential enzymes that are necessary and, you know, to break down the food and the acidity in our stomach and the certain gases. And all of those things are affected, especially when one is more stressed. When one is stressed, junk food has a more severe effect on the body when you are stressed because the body has to struggle to keep itself going. In the meantime, it's dealing with the energy, the frequency of the emotions, of your emotions, whether you're depressed or whether you are just really agitated or upset, it puts the body into the fight or flight mode. So the body is dealing with fight or flight, and at the same time, now it's got to try to take energy one from the other to process what you're eating to try to create some sort of fuel to keep the body going. So that's how we really create a lot of chaos. Then it blocks us even further because
right
now we're really acid, because the body can't process the stuff that we're eating, so it creates acidity, which then affects brain capacity, which then cuts us off even further from the more expansive aspect of who we are. So you see the domino effect that ultimately occurs.
Right, right. And as we affect the biological transducer, as it were, by putting food in it that has been destroyed by deep frying, for instance, we can't resonate with the earth that the food
right
came from. So
right
we're disconnected from the energy of the planet because we're not eating as close to raw as she could give it to us.
Right. And even if it's cooked, the thing with cooked food, if food is, for example, which when they used to cook it, say, in the ground without a fire, and something is slow cooked, it really isn't damaging like when something is cooked on the stove. When we cook it on the stove, everything is cooked very fast. It's that rapid cooking that really creates a destruction. But if something were, when we cooked and they put it in the ground and it cooked all day, the nutrients are actually still reserved. They're actually still there. It's the fast cooking that actually destroys the food. You know, way back when they used to, you know, cook a pot of soup, it would take them all day to cook it because they cooked it on low. It didn't destroy the nutrients in the food. So what I say is this. You eat for two reasons, because everybody's not going to eat raw. And there are two reasons why we eat. We must recognize that we eat for pleasure and we eat for fuel. I think we have to make that distinct difference when you're eating for pleasure and when you're eating for fuel. If you're going to eat for pleasure, then you have to make sure that you also provide the body with fuel so that the body can break down the foods that you're eating for pleasure. We are here to enjoy the experience. And I always want to make sure that I bring that up. We are here to enjoy the experience. So everything that we do in being here is part of enjoying the experience. However, we change as we go along in terms of what we may no longer choose to experience. But it doesn't mean that if somebody's eating meat, you know, that they're a bad person, what are they doing? You know, it's bad. No, that's what they need to do. That's where they are. That's their level of enjoyment of the experience. And same thing with somebody that's vegetarian. And so we end up building, to some degree, these pockets around things, which is what we're used to doing. We are programmed in that manner. The body's programmed in that manner for things to become a pattern and habitual. So it doesn't mean that because you're vegetarian or you're vegan that you are extremely expansive in consciousness or awareness either. You could be just as limited. So I like for people to really recognize that, because then the ego doesn't step in and we don't beat up the other person or look down on the other person because they're, you know, doing what they're doing. They're eating how they're eating. And a vegan or a vegetarian, they get sick with all kinds of situations and die. So that...
Yes, they do.
Exactly. So that should tell us that there is more to this than simply the food. This comes back to consciousness. This comes back to that ultimate force that is in, that's powering this vehicle. That's really what that comes back to. And so now you cannot continue, you know, if you're choosing to become expansive, then you won't want to continue to do things based on in a fractured manner where you're doing this thing and then you're completely closed off to this thing. And no, you have to become more expansive, and it's a holistic approach. Evolution is really a holistic approach, not the fractured approach that we're used to with everything in this life is fracturization. You're either good or bad. Everything is, you know, is polarized, and there is no balance. There is no central point.
We'll talk more about that evolution in our second hour. We're right at the top of the first hour, so let's take a quick 7-minute break, listen to a little bit of music, and get something to drink. And we'll be back with more Sonya Barrett. This is X Squared Radio. Don't go away. As spring is coming on to us, I want us each to make sure that we move forward with a newness of life, without the despair that the news media would like to pour on us, recycled every 30 minutes, 24 hours a day. I want 2010 to be a year of great abundance for you all. And for us as well. Just wanted to give you some updates. The electric car company is doing fine. Came through the crash testing okay. And we're going to begin production here before too long. So those of you that have been waiting for your electric vehicles, you may not have to wait much longer. Also, don't forget that the trilogy, the Ark of Millions of Years trilogy, can still be purchased at arkofmillionsofyears.com. The first two volumes, Volume 1 and Volume 2, will be sent to you via link for immediate download as audiobooks. We read the entire 40 hours of books to you, so if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read them for you. Volume 3, we're still working on. If I can ever get just a couple more hours put into the day, we're working on it. 26-hour days would be great, because then I could record for 1 or 2 hours a day and I would have this done in a month for you. But Volume 3 is in the works. Several chapters have been recorded and the sound quality is very, very good, and I know you guys are really going to enjoy it. So when Volume 3 is ready, we'll get it out to you. I also wanted to share with you that the next book is done. It is through editing, and it's ready to go to the publisher, and we're in negotiations right now. My goal is to get that in your hands by the end of May, so that'll be good. We'll have another C2C visit, and you can hear all about it. Trust me, it is a breakthrough. So it'll be well worth the wait, and fun to read, and you'll get a lot out of it. And I really appreciate you. Next month, we're going to be at a conference in Calgary, Canada. I'll have the link on the website so you can, if you live in the area, you can make your way over there. And I think we have three or four conferences coming up this year, and we might do some international stuff. You just never know. So stay tuned for all that. Our guest tonight is Sonia Barrett. Her book is The Holographic Canvas, The Fusing of Mind and Matter. And her website is spiritinform.com, spiritinform.com. You can always go to X Squared Radio, listen to the archive. The link is right below the book cover for The Holographic Canvas. Welcome back to the program, Sonia. This hour, what I'd like to do, you mentioned that magnetism and gravity on this earth affects two things on this planet. It affects everything about the human body. Explain how you came to this and what you mean by it in the book. Well, you were talking about the pyramid and how calcium in the bones was the same as the limestone that was put on the pyramids, and that these energy lines, these flux lines that go around the earth, also affect the human body, the human form. And I think we know a little bit about that because several of us have been off planet. Not me, myself, but there are 12 sets of footprints on the moon to prove it. And they did notice a difference between being on Earth and not being on Earth because they were outside the magnetosphere. Well, I had no particular direction. I just felt that you had such a great perspective about it that, you know, perhaps maybe we can talk about are there any symbols that we might have left for ourselves from antiquity that should help us remember what we're doing here and why we're here?
Design. So I see the pyramids as a reminder of our descent from the apex of time, which the apex, the capstone, that point, I refer to as that zero point. At that point, all the way down until you take on this matter form. And on the bottom of that rung, we can look at it in the sense of, okay, radio waves, which is what's at the bottom. That is, you know, the lower field there on the level of the electromagnetic spectrum is the Hertz field, which is radio waves. And then you go up to the next level, and you have infrared, and then above that you have visible light. And as this is going up, you will notice it's narrowing. So at the bottom, you picture the pyramid, how it spreads out at the bottom, and you picture that's a slower timeline. That's a slower frequencies, very slow. That's the Hertz field. That's the radio field. And as it starts to go up this ladder of the spectrum, the spin becomes faster. So everything is spinning slow at the bottom, goes up
right.
Infrared, the spin is a little faster. Then you go up to visible light, the spin is a little faster. Then you go up to, ultraviolet light, then the spin is faster. Then you go up to X-ray, and it's faster. And you go to gamma ray, and it's faster. And it continues that fast pace all the way up to point zero. And that would be a whole other show into even trying to think about going into, is there anything beyond that zero point? But the bottom line of it is we start out at the top and we come down. And when you really pay attention, you see that it takes on the shape of a pyramid. It widens, and then it goes all the way up like a fan.
Right.
It's on low speed, then it's on medium and whatever, low, and then high and medium high. And then it goes into this propulsion, this spin where you can't even see it. And that's what we're dealing with. This is how our reality is divined and designed. And those pyramids remind me of our descent. This is what we're attempting to do, is to ascend again beyond the slower field that we're in, this physical reality, and we're going back up. So that's what that reminds me of. And that was a big focus in the book as well.
Well, I saw you kind of brush close to this, and it's I granted it's another concept, but I wanted to get your feedback on it. It is the concept of singularity, that this pyramid comes to a point, which is maybe the origin point of the whole universe, the source, the one from which we all spring or are our piece of, and perhaps the idea that you know, maybe it's us, maybe it's our observation while we're out here that's actually creating the universe, that's creating, I mean, the
it
concept
is.
that there are individual realities on this planet, 7 billion of them, and that we're in some reality stew that makes up the Earth. Are we having an effect on the universe with our observation here in this human
absolutely.
Consciousness
yeah.
soup?
Absolutely. I mean, observation is everything. I think we have to remember, I look at it that it's like we're on an expedition. And our job is to gather data. We're gathering in data from our interaction with everything, every experience, every emotion, everything. That's what it is. And data is converted into what? Streams of energy, their frequency. So that's why we transmit and receive. We transmit the information, you know, back to whatever that core point is, where everything is records that information, and we receive information as well in the same manner. So there's this receiving and transmitting process that occurs, and that's equal to the pulsating, you know, pulsation process that's occurring. Everything is doing this pulsing process. And there was something else I was going to tell you around that point, and I just lost my point on that. Oh, gosh.
We were talking about the singularity and how, you know, maybe...
Oh, how we affect. Do we affect everything?
Right. Right.
Yes, and we do. And here is where it gets interesting, because if indeed we are the observer and the observer is affecting everything, then everything that is being seen is only going to be limited once again to the judgment, the prejudgment, because we do. We have a prejudgment on everything before it's observed. And that prejudgment, even though it's not a conscious judgment, that quiet prejudgment is based on the stored information that we operate by. And a lot of that information is very limited. It's limited information. So we make our judgments and assessments based on what our perceptions are, based on what our belief systems are. It's all based on that. So the outcome, what we see as the outcome, is really limited to as far as we can, you know, we can stretch our perception. The individual can stretch their perception. So you have collectively on the planet, there is a collective understanding and a collective agreement and a collective belief system, yet we have our own individual belief system, but we have a general collective agreement in terms of a base concept of what reality will look like to us. Now, this goes the same thing with scientists. I may have said this earlier in the show. With scientists, they are always going to see, as far as they will allow themselves to see as a possibility, and yet their own judgment comes into play in terms of the outcome, in terms of what the potential outcome will be or what their assessment is. And what I saw also is that is reality or is creation, is it making itself up as we go along according to what we can perceive as a possibility? Is it unfolding in every moment for you as you can perceive it to be? Is that really what it is for you as you can perceive it to be? And then for me, I'm seeing something else because maybe my perception is wider and allowing. So I think you've got this giant, unlimited, undefinable, source of whatever we want to call it, that continues to recreate, remold, rebirth itself, yet in the end, that is still us.
Let's assume then that it's not unfolding for someone out there, that they're struggling with their bills, they're struggling with classes, they're struggling with challenges that their boss has given them, and that or their spouse or all their girlfriends or whatever are giving them. Let's assume that it's not unfolding the way that they want it to, regardless of whether they think it's unfolding the way it was designed to or not.
Right.
Where is it that a person can go in their head or in their mind or out there in meditation to sort of gain control of their own sovereign direction so that they can say, okay, I am now the master of my own destiny. I am acting upon the universe and it is not acting upon me.
Right, because we're the one happening to the game. The game isn't happening to us. Reality, we are happening to this thing we call reality. Now,
oh, you'd be surprised how many people say exactly the opposite.
No, we're the ones happening to, we say life is happening to us, but we're the ones happening to it. We are the ones that's making it what it is. And the thing, one of the most significant things that I have said to so many people, we must first and foremost be brutally honest with ourselves, and that is a challenge that people have. When you're in a relationship, when you're in certain jobs, when you're in whatever the situation is, because we are so programmed to see, the first thing that we see is something outside of ourselves that is really creating this demise, that has really put us in this situation. if we can really just go ahead, look at it, and I'm going to use relationship because I'm very familiar with that one. If we can take that and go, okay, is there a pattern here? Where, you know, is there a pattern? Some people say, yeah, I don't know why I keep meeting, you know, people that take advantage of me. You know, every relationship I've been in, I've tried to be a nice person, I get taken advantage of, or whatever the case may be. We have to stop that. You got to stop. If you're saying that, stop. Let us look at the pattern. Let us look at when this kind of experience started. Let's go back to your first relationship. Then let's go back even further. And I've done this with several people that I've done consultation with. And they've figured it out in, you know, maybe one or two sessions. A lot of times people get it in that 1 hour. You get it. Because they have that aha moment of, oh my goodness, now I see where this is coming from. Now let's go back to what I talked about with all that data that's stored from, you know, the onset of time in you. Let's recognize that, but let's take it to this level of reality, this life that you're dealing with. And now let's look at the amount of information that you stored from the minute you got here on the planet, of things you saw and how life was in your house, around you. Most often we get imprinted with certain things that we've seen, we've experienced, and we don't recognize just how much the choices that we make in life, down to the very career we choose, is based on some sort of imprint that we picked up along the way from way back when. If we can start to really put some of these things out and start to look at them and take the responsibility off of the other people. If you're in an abusive relationship, which I've talked about, let me tell you, everything I'm saying, I'm able to say it because I have made it through what you would watch or find, you know, read about maybe on the news or what you've heard about. I was in a very physically, I was in an abusive marriage for, situation for 14 years. I was married to this man. It's absolutely, I was terrified, me and my children. I understand what that feels like. I understand what it is to be completely broken. You've got to take care of your kids. You don't know what you're going to do. I know what it's like to be evicted. So what I'm saying these things because I want people to understand, I'm not coming from a space where, oh my gosh, life has just been great, and you know, I've gone and I've worked in corporate America, and I've made all this money, and I've done, no, I have lived many things, and it's because I've experienced all of those things that's allowing me to be able to say these things to you today. Those things help to propel me into wanting to understand more about life and how my life was the way it was and why I was experiencing the things that I was experiencing. For me, what I found, though, is that the very traumatic experience that I dealt with for the 14 years became actually the footing that really forced me to discover this. So once I got that, I was able to be joyous and release that and not be angry, not be mad at this person. I get along with him just fine now. I get it. I was able to thank him, and he was able to then go on and deal with what he had done. He had to still deal with the consequences of his actions. So my point is that we have to get off of that poor me box, and we have to say, let me put my life out on this table. What is the main thing here that is an issue to me? Is it my job that I just wish I didn't have to come into? I hate coming in here. One of the things that helped me with working in corporate America, and believe me, I'm one of those people that don't like to be confined. I don't like the 9-to-5. I just didn't want to deal with it, but I had to. So the shining moment that released me was the day when I realized, wait a second, nobody is making me be here. Nobody.
And what do?
Okay, you've got your car payment. Okay, but who's making you have your car payment? Then you go, well, but I've got to take care of my kids, take care of this. Understand that everything that you know that you have to take care of, mortgage payments, all those things, it's all choice. You have to get to that place where you peel it so far down to what it is in order to reclaim power from it. When you when you do that, you reclaim so much power, and you realize that everything you are doing right now is because you want to. If you chose to leave that job and go sleep on a park bench and abandon your kids, that would be a choice that you would make. But the bottom line of it is, it's your choice. You're choosing to be at that job because you want to, not the other way around. And a lot of times the job becomes intimidating to us and we're scared we're going to lose our job. Let me tell you something. If you have to, you will find another job. You will find another job. Never get that secure where you're thinking, yeah, but my this and my that. No. I said to myself, there is nothing that I own that was worth me being this miserable for when I finally figured it out. I said, there is nothing that I have. And, of course, at that point, my kids were grown, so it was in that space. I said, what's the worst thing that could happen to me if I leave this job? Okay, well, you don't have, you can't pay for your rent. You end up in your car. I had to peel it down to the worst thing that could happen so that I could free myself. When I took it there, instead of trying to avoid it, what's the worst thing that could happen? Oh, you end up in your car. But guess what? I will live. When you get that no matter what is going on, you will live, it frees you to go and clear all your other stuff and figure it out, because your greatest fear, the fear of human beings, is non-existence, is annihilation. It's survival that we're in. And if we can get past that fear right there, you can begin to change your life and the choices that you are making. You realize that you do have the opportunity to change those choices. You're not limited to them.
Yeah, but you know, if you sit down and you say, okay, what is the worst thing that can happen? And then you contemplate on that. Oh, well, you know, I could lose my job, which means I would lose my house, which means I would lose my car. I'd have to drop out of school. And then this would happen and that would happen. Oh, my goodness, you know, you come to all this. You might be, just by interjecting your fear of what is the worst that can happen, you might be manifesting the worst that can happen.
Well, but they're not, though. They're not. Here's why. They are already having that fear in them anyway. That's my point. What you just said is already the root. It's already there. That is what I'm saying, is it's already there. You have to go and own up to the fact that it is there and follow that fear through and then conquer it. See, when we follow the fear through as opposed to what we're taught, which is to just sweep it under the rug, it's not gone. You're fooling yourself. Then you end up with cancer and you end up with problems because you can't face it. You have to go ahead, look at it, and then realize that your fear is unwarranted. It's not. Most of the time when you look at it, you take it all the way. What is it based on? A lot of times it's not based on anything but your own fear of the situation. And you have to not lie to yourself anymore and be positive thinking, but in the back somewhere, that's quietly what you're fearing. You look at it, then you override the fear because you can get to see that the fear is completely unwarranted. That's what I did. When I saw that, it was like, okay, but what is this all based on? It's not based on anything. It wasn't based on anything. It was just a fear of based on nothing. Then you start making some different choices. It gives you the opportunity because you have cleaned that part of it out. You got that out the way. You just got it out the way. You're not manifesting it. You're not going, oh, okay, well, this is really going to happen. No, you're looking at what your fear is, what might happen. And then you go, oh, but it's supported by really, it's not really supported by nothing. What do I have right now? This moment. Is any of those things happening in this moment? No. When you recognize none of those things are happening right in this moment, not 2 seconds from now, but right in this moment, that's when you realize that's my window of opportunity, because all that exists is right this moment. Everything else is a speculation. It doesn't matter what your boss says, well, I'm going to fire you next week. Next week is not here yet. As far as you're concerned, that's a speculation. What you're dealing with is this moment. Your fear of what he said will be the thing that gets you fired. So So you have to be able to look at it and bring it back to the fact that, yeah, but none of that is happening. In this moment, none of that is happening. And as long as you see that in this moment, then you build from that moment. And that moment becomes that zero-point spin. That becomes that moment of nothing. That's the point where when you take a breath and you inhale and you exhale, there's always a point where there's where the in, when you're inhaling and you're exhaling, there's a point where it all meets. It's like diamagnetism, or blotch wall. You know, there's a spin going one way and a spin going the other way, and then where they meet becomes a vortex. That point forms a vortex, and in that vortex, you can, you know, things can levitate because there's zero point. There's no gravity there. That's the same thing in the manner in which we operate. The moment is the moment, and all that exists is this moment, and anything outside of that is a speculation.
I totally agree with you, and I can tell you that, you know, when you ask people if they think that life is, let's say, 30% their own choice and 70% destiny, or 70% their own choice and 30% destiny, things that you just can't do anything about. There are just designs that are coming down the rail at you so irrefutably like planets moving through space. It is when the person realizes that they are 100% responsible for their own life condition, that's when they really hit the wall. That's when they really say, it's like, okay, I've got this beautiful house and this wonderful job and these marvelous business cards that have this great title on it. And if things don't go well, if the company doesn't make it or I don't keep this job, then I'm going to be sleeping on the floor. Well, then just come to terms with sleeping on the floor.
Absolutely.
And then nothing will have an effect on you. You'll drop.
Absolutely.
You'll lose all those things, your job, your title, your everything that's with it, and you'll
but
be
you
sleeping
live.
On the floor. Yeah. And they can't kill you.
No. You will live. And what the beauty of this is, out of that comes a more refreshing and amazing life. And most often, you end up with more than you were struggling so hard to hold on to. But it just happens all very differently, not with that kind of struggle and attachment and trying to hold on to this thing because it's too much. And I've been there. I mean, I went through foreclosure years ago. I understand what that feels like. To fight for your house and lose it. And one day I went to the mountains. I remember that day ever so well because, oh, I was good at fighting for my holding on to my house. And I went up there, a place called Idlewild here in California. And I went up there, and I remember I went in my little spot there with the rocks and the trees. They were like my friends, and I would just lay there, and the birds were singing. And nature, it's like everything there said to me, let go. Just let go. And, you know, I came down with such a peace, and I let go. And I did go through quite a bit for a moment there in terms of, you know, where I was going to stay. The kids were teenagers. One was graduating, I think, high school. But I was trusting, and life ended up more beautiful than that experience in the end. And I've seen it happen time and time again. I didn't know how it was going to work out, but I just knew within me that I just had to trust this process, you know, that the more expansive part of me was guiding me to and let go and allow, and that's what started to happen for me. But when we hold on too tight, as somebody said, when we hold too tight, And you're, as they say, your fists are closed too tight, you can't receive. You're holding on so tight, nothing can come in because you got your fists closed so tight. So you have to be able to loosen up. And what you think you're holding on to so strongly, you're actually a lot of times choking the possibility of a resolve because you're in the way. You're blocking it with all your third-dimensional solutions, and you're the physical you can't see. Our sight is very limited. The physical visual is very limited as opposed to the more expansive part of us that can see so far and wide. And so we end up making, creating solutions from our survival program. And that's really what ends up happening. And we think we solve certain things, and a lot of times it's temporary because it's done from the point of view of survival from your old program. So you pull on, you know, things that you have in your library there of survival, and you use those to get you to the next moment. You know, but then it becomes temporary. So it's all of those things. And as you say, the individual coming to a realization that it's really, you have a choice. You can become responsible for who you are and the choices that you're making.
Well, I totally am with that. I understand all of that. Let's talk about, you say that our predecessors are from Sirius in your book. Let's explore that a little bit. What is it about this star system that means so much to us?
And, you know, it's so funny. I wrote that such a long time ago, and that's a subject I really haven't even, I haven't explored or talked about in a very, very long time, I think because it just hasn't been relevant to me per se. But I think then when I wrote the book, I saw us coming in from various pockets of time, I think is what it is, just various points in time, because I think it's what we call the distance or the closeness of that particular planet or what do you call it, star system to
Sirius.
Earth. There was
the
a
Pleiades.
Sense of, pardon me?
The Pleiades?
Yeah, they're all kind of connected. They all are like cousins. There's a connection point there between all of, you know, at least those two anyway, and Earth. And so at the time, what I saw is the connection with them and moving from that point onto what we call the Earth plane. It's like setting up, you know, the Earth plane to come into for a level of experience. But again, these places, what I see them as, when we say, you know, again, light years away, it's just that they're in another pocket of time. And again, because we measure everything is quantitative, you know, distance for us becomes what we call far away. Light years seems just so far away. And I think so that's where the big mystery really comes in. But, you know, when you have technology that can probably shoot you here, bring you here in a flash, or, I don't know, maybe even bodies that can be in this pocket of time that we call Earth in but a thought, then it changes the course of everything. But I do believe that we definitely have a connection with several what we would call beings outside of our neck of the woods or our place that we call Earth. And that's how we find a lot of these indigenous groups that refer to, you know, the gods that came. And you see the hieroglyphics and in many places you see the images that are drawn of ships and so on and so forth. So that kind of visitation I definitely see has occurred, and there were levels of technology, I believe, that were, you know, used here. Everything for us is very big because of our baby-like stage. Everything is just, you know, it's like you see fire, somebody flicks a lighter, you've never seen that before. That's like a huge thing for us. So, well, that's what I see with this. I don't see anything as that over-the-top, fantastic, mystical. I just see that as just all aspects of existence, that we're not the only ones that exist, you know, in creation as we do. They may look different, being different kinds of bodies based on the environment that they're in. but certainly I do believe that there is some sort of close connection with them and with the people or the beings of Earth.
Well, I think that I don't have any problem having an open mind with there being beings from other worlds, and I realize that the pyramid is particularly aimed or linked with the star Sirius, and that several ancient civilizations, not the least of which is the Dogon Indians, who claim that they are the star people, who in their cosmology number Earth as the sixth planet, not the third planet, because
Right. They're
counting from the outside in and not from the sun out. And the only way
Right. They
can have that perspective is if they came from somewhere else and noticed it on
Right. The
way in and then handed it down from generation to generation. I have no problem with any of that there.
Right.
The idea that now there are 7 billion souls on the Earth, and there
Right. Are
7 billion plus soul ships, otherwise known as bodies, on the Earth,
mm-hmm.
living, breathing, consuming, and being consumed.
Mm-hmm.
Where did they all come from? And are they all just, is this their first rodeo on the Earth, or
are they recycled? I think a lot of these people are trapped. I really do. I think that we are caught in this wheel, for lack of a better explanation, this reincarnation wheel, let's say. I think that we're caught because if you really look at the majority of the planet as we know it, though, I make that emphasis. People on the planet, as we recognize people on the planet to be, when we look at the spiritual belief systems, it is very clear that an evolution would have to take place within many people to get us off this ride, this loop, this limitation, this prehistoric or primitive way of thinking that continues to confine us to the game. Everything is outside of us. This is the belief system. Everything is greater than us. We are not able to. We need a savior. Most of the planet's belief system is based on that, someone coming to save you. So I think you have a lot of souls who just keep either returning to this space, this point in time, as we know it, and very few souls are getting off the wheel. Very few souls are getting off the wheel.
There are some new souls on the wheel and old souls on the wheel?
Yeah, I'm sure that there are, because this is an amazing playing field. I think that there's more old ones here than newer ones. I really do. I think there's more older ones, and you can, if you look at the actions of people and the belief system, and you are around certain people, there's certain people you can recognize as, wow, it's almost as if this person has not ever been here before, and everything is, they operate a little differently. Things are a little bizarre to them. But then there are people who are very heavily riddled with, things that would definitely say they're familiar with this kind of concept. People who are really stuck in continuous worship of the ancestors. And I'm not knocking the ancestors. What I want people to understand is you become the ancestors. You are the ancestors, and the ancestors need to move forward. The ancestors need to move forward. The ancestors can't seem to move forward because it's more of the same thing. So if you have groups like that who are stuck or heavily stuck in tradition, and a lot of these cultures are like that. They don't break tradition. This is the way it is, and we're really stuck on that. Then you get more of the same thing. There's just more people coming in and to the same thing. And it's just over and over. They don't want to break from that tradition. It's just more of the same thing. So until certain things change, until some of those patterns change, you know, it's just more of the same thing. Now, what I do see, though, is that I think that life on Earth and people, as we see, you know, people to be, I do not believe, I should say, my knowingness, that we are seeing all of what human beings are actually, you know, are exist on the planet. I think there are human beings that exist here on the planet that are transcending beyond our collective view of what reality is. I really do. I just don't think that we make that kind of connection with those people necessarily. I think they walk among us. I think they, you know, they know. But I don't think that we stop to really think of that because we're so absorbed in a particular level of collective thinking, collective understanding, which is more of a very, you know, limited approach. But I do feel that. I do feel that there are many that are living beyond the game of reality as we see it to be. But we think that this is the end all and this is it. And I've said this at other lectures that I've done. I don't think so. I think there's a whole other reality of Earth completely unseen by us. But we don't, you know, one will only see once again as far as one's perception will allow. And our perceptions, based on our programming, says this is reality. This
is
how it is.
But there's
got to
be something marvelous about this mortal experience on this Earth. I mean, you got to admit.
I think it is marvelous.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is amazing.
Look at the masters that have come here. I mean, if Jesus has been here, if Buddha has been here, if Muhammad, if Confucius, if President Lincoln, I mean, if all these great leaders and great thinkers have come here to have their mortal life, this has got to be a good place to have a mortal life.
It is a great place, and that's in the very beginning of, I think, of the show. That was the I think one of the points I was making is this is not something that we want to beat up and try to escape it and toss it aside. This is an amazing design, an amazing and beautiful experience. But how do you say that to someone who doesn't quite get that yet, and they're struggling, and they're doing this, which is the question you basically asked me earlier. What I've come to realize is how beautiful this experience is, and the even more wonderful aspect of this is when you start to understand more about it. Yes, that's when you go, ah, and then you begin to transcend to these greater levels, as, you know, according to our history with Buddha and Yeshua and others that we don't know about, who transcended beyond the standard level one experience of being a human being. They stepped into greater possibilities of what the human is capable of. And that's the thing. So it's not that you're trying to escape this. Every moment of every experience in this wonderful game is all part of your purpose and experience. You're gathering data on everything that you experience. It's your interaction with everything, your piece of furniture to your loved ones. It's the emotional engagement, the feeling you get. That's what comes from it. That's what you gather. That is what the feeling that you end up receiving from it. And in my book, in the very first part, that is the reason why it says there where I thanked everyone. I had tears in my eyes when I wrote that, because when I looked at all the people who upset me, all the people who made me happy, all the people who I was angry with, all the people who betrayed me, everybody it was because of all those people why I arrived at the moment that I arrived at, where I was starting to understand more about this. The times when I was so upset and angry, and that propelled me. My nightmare marriage, that propelled me. And then I got it. And then there was nothing for me to hold within myself in terms of being angry at these people, what we would call anger, because I saw at the root of it all was this profound love. For lack of a better word, I can't even explain it, but I use the word love because it's so beyond our perception what love is, but a profound love that all these people had for me to allow to me to dislike them or to whatever it is so that I could have the fullest experience of everything that I experienced in this life up until that point that took me into this space of understanding. And if I had skipped any of it,
and where
I probably
love
wouldn't
come
be
from?
Here. I wouldn't know this if I had said, oh, you know, regret. So I don't preach regret. I think there has to be an embrace and recognize that every single thing that has happened in your life is a stepping stone to something more expansive if you allow yourself to begin to see that.
And where does this love come from? Where does this great overwhelming love come from? Is there some bearded being out there who's going to come and rescue us and take us into the clouds and say, oh, it's okay,
I know
life was miserable?
not that I know of.
Everything's going to be all right now.
You're going to take me shopping, maybe. I don't know. But, no, that love
from?
That I'm talking about is that overall feeling of that which simply is, that everything is birthed from, or everything, or the illusion of everything as existence is coming from. I see that as the whatever that undefinable substance is, that undefinable substance is allowing everything to occur. There's good, bad, and indifferent, as we call it. Everything is allowed to be experienced. That's profound love. Everything is allowed to be experienced. And it's not that we will not, there won't be a reaction, or as they say, the consequences for our actions. Nobody's punishing anybody. It's just the way everything is. For every action, there's a reaction. That is simply it. Whatever we do, nobody's stopping you from doing it. You can go ahead and do it, but understand that there will always be a reaction from your action. Now, you have to decide whether you're up for what the results are, what that unfolds from your actions, what the reaction is. Are you up for that? That's the question. But nobody is stopping you from doing anything. That's profound love. No judgment. Go ahead and do whatever you want to do. Just know you deal with how it unfolds. I'm not going to punish you. Nobody's going to punish you. It's a way of balance. It's just the way everything is. You create it for yourself.
Exactly right. Well, in your book you talk about, you have a chapter called Taking Responsibility for Your Joy and Pain in All Timelines, and I was wondering about this because, you know, I hear the complaints from so many people. I wonder if they would be so eager to live a long life if they only had bliss and no challenge in their lives every day. You know, when people are faced with the reality that there is no rescue ship coming, it's just them. And if they don't get it right, they got to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about a maze that has been designed. Who designed it?
A maze that has been designed. Wow, you're really reaching into some chapter here.
We're going through a maze of life that's been designed, and you said it in third person, and the thought came to me, So is there some teleological maze, some human construct that's just basic? Well, I mean, it gets adorned a little bit with illness or wealth or whatever it is they're going to put in there. Little hidden treasures that you can scratch off and find special, wonderful joys in there.
Easter egg hunt.
but, just like an Easter egg hunt on a website. So, you know, we have a long life or a short life or a life with no pain or no freedom or a life with wealth and beauty and model-like body and we can eat anything we want, pizza included.
Some people have that, you know. Pizza included. Yes, you must include pizza.
Yeah,
but,
it's just not their challenge, right? We have to watch what we eat, otherwise we're not going to be able to fit into our genes. But it's a maze, nonetheless.
It's the original. It's like there's a blueprint, as I said earlier. It's like there is a design, a setup, a structure, for a. It's like creating a base foundation for how a game will run. Now you just go on your mark, get set, go. You've already created this thing. Now it's everybody go ahead and go. And maybe, you know, hopefully you find your way out of it. But I think that's the base design. And, you know, again, it's not in the book, but I've written about it also on my website. There's articles on there where, again, I talk about the various levels of system designs and engineers. And it's basically these different levels of what we would call gods, which are only aspects of consciousness at various levels of creation, where different designs or different designs are set in place or set up. We created this from on one level we did, and then we came in to have the experience. However, we still exist on all these various levels, and I think that's the thing that we don't recognize. We exist on all these various levels, going back up that ladder. It's just that once you're in the thickness of this, you don't really remember that you exist. You get flashes now and then that you really exist in all these different other aspects of time, and you are the creator of this unique game. Now, that same pyramidal structure that I talked about, when you look at it, you know, again, you have the radio waves and microwave would be considered there, and infrared and visible and ultraviolet and X-ray and gamma ray going up. And gamma ray level, we're talking the, you know, atomic nuclei, and then the X-ray is the atoms, and ultraviolet is the molecules, and visible is protozoans, and so on and so forth. But that's going. I did it going down, and then when you're going back up, you're seeing the dense reality all the way, and then you're going all the way back up to, you know, the atom, and so on and so forth. So you see that you have to exist in all these different aspects of the human body being constructed all the way down to where it is right now. You see that you have to be on all these other levels, of it. You're still there. But it's so dense here when you get into this reality in these bodies because of how they're designed for this particular slow time experience that, you know, you don't remember any of it. So now you have to remember and then gradually attempt to make your way back up. So you don't remember what you've created, that this is really your own design, your own game that you created. And even individually, you design a hologram every time. We're always redesigning our hologram of reality by the various people that come and go from our lives, the various things that we desire to have in our lives, and we are mix and matching, you know, all the time with who comes in, who we let in, who we don't let in. And people are only showing up, they only come in because there's a door open. There has to be some sort of resonance for any kind of interaction, whether it be people or a circumstance or a situation, because everything has measures some sort of frequency pattern. There's some sort of measurability to the energy. So it's only going to be there according to what is needed. And that's I think, a very important factor for us to remember and to recognize. And these are all how you begin to start taking responsibility for you and maybe move beyond the fantasy of someone coming to rescue you. Rescue you from what? You know, really, think about it.
You would be surprised. I mean, you go to various churches, which are the pews of which are filled with people who are miserable in their daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
And if you speak to them about what their doctrine is that they believe in, they couldn't tell you a thing. But they could tell
they
you
know.
That
no.
They've come to the point in their life where they're turning it all over to Jesus.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Jesus is going to take care of everything for them.
All of
so
it. He died for our sins. Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's the same thing with many of the other religions. It's someone else that's going to take care of this. Everybody reports to someone, even, you know, the secret societies, Freemasonry, or whatever the case may be. They all have some sort of point of a representative. New Age movement, we've got Lord Maitreya, which I'm always talking about, Lord Maitreya and Sanat Kimura, and they have this whole list that they must report to and who is looking out for them, and it just goes on and on and on. So you see why there's so many beings, once again, stuck here with that kind of thinking and limitation, yet even in the Bible, there's not one time where I've seen it written where Jesus said, I'm going to set up a church. Or, I mean, even although the Bible is so butchered, you can go through it, and you, if you really pay attention, you can see, read between the lines on some of that stuff. And one of my favorite scriptures is the part where Nicodemus had said to Jesus, according to the scripture that was written, you know, what was the question? He asked which way the wind bloweth, and Jesus said to him, if I've told you of heaven, of earthly things, and ye believe not, how can I tell you of heavenly things? How can I tell you which way the wind bloweth? And immediately for me, I looked at that and I thought, well, geez, that makes sense. If he's trying to tell you about some basic things, which is exactly how it is here, about Earth, and you don't even want to hear that, you won't even listen to me, how am I going to tell you the sciences? How am I going to tell you how the wind blows? How am I going to tell you any of that? You're not even listening to the basic information that I'm telling you. There's so many little scriptures in there that will show humans how they're perceived and how they are very minuscule in their thinking and how they become perfect targets for control, for being manipulated, because we are programmed to be led. We like to be led. We want somebody else to take responsibility for us. The same thing with going to the doctor. We want someone else to take responsibility for us. It's too much work. We don't want to do the work. It's just easier to get somebody to tell us exactly what's going to happen. What do we believe? Okay, if we go to church on Sundays or we go every, and we're a good person, whatever a good person really is, then
exactly.
We go to heaven. So there's the fantasy that we live under, and that fantasy, like I said, it spills through basically most of the planet. I don't care what you call the religion. There is some sort of limitation generally attached to it. Any organization that will either expel you because you are going be outside of that package construct of belief that you've been given, I don't care what organization it is, you need to really rethink. And if you've been there for 15 and 20 and 30 years at any one organization, you also need to stop and you need to rethink, because most often you are stuck in a limitation, a ritual that is not evolving you spiritually. You're just going through the motions. There's no major evolution. You're just in a pattern. And that's with anything. You meditate every day, 9 o'clock every day for the last 50 years, and there has to be a point where that meditation becomes integrated into life, into this process that happens. I'm not saying you don't do this sometimes, because I do sometimes. I have those moments where I feel like, okay, I need to really sit and I need to do a focus. But what I do is I take what meditation is supposed to be and I integrate it into my life, so this becomes a natural part of me tuning in and being connected with myself. I'm not saying I don't step outside of that sometimes and then, you know, I'm going, my God, how did I get this far out in the water? Then I got a doggy paddle back in. But
yeah, exactly.
The point is that we must recognize when there is no deep evolution to what we do. Doing something routinely every day forever does not mean that there is expansive evolution going on. You've gotten good at it, and it's a habit, and that's what the body's designed based on, is habits. We're good at habits and rituals. We always have to evolve everything we do. Everything we do, you must add dimension to it. Whatever your practice is, yoga, tai chi, you must add dimension to it. If you don't, you stop growing. You don't really grow anymore.
Well, and then what happens if you stop growing? You're sitting there on the pew. You've heard the 52 sermons of the year, and he's going back to sermon one. Oh yes, I remember this. But I can't leave, because if I leave, that means I'm not faithful. And if I'm not faithful,
right,
then I won't be supported by my community. And
you won't,
gosh,
go to heaven, most of all.
Yeah, what happens if God does come in the clouds? And,
That's right.
You know, gosh, I quit going 3 weeks ago. He's not going to pick me up, you know. I'm going to be left behind.
You're going to be left at the bus stop. I know I was terrified as a child. I remember hearing the minister talk about Jesus coming like a thief in the night. Oh, my God. And then I thought, if I wasn't good today, he could come any time in the night. And the minister said that he could come and he's going to take, you know, whoever was good, and then you're going to be left behind, and all you're going to see is that they're gone and you're still here. Well, that is terrifying to a child. That's crazy. So I was kind of terrified about being good, because, you know, what if my parents are gone? I'm left here because I wasn't good. This is the kind of insanity that we do. It's crazy.
Exactly. Well, you know, so this is the dilemma that we're in. We have all this knowledge. We're empowered to think about it. We realize that we're responsible for our own life condition. We realize that we don't get one shot at this. We assume mortal form many times, maybe not back to back. We might wait 100 years or 1,000 years in between lifetimes.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then again, we might come back, you know, the next millisecond. As soon as we pass away, we're born into another body. But you mention a very elusive subject in your book, that of ascension. Can you explain for the listeners what is ascension and why is it different than death and resurrection?
Well, ascension is basically what I mentioned before. One second. It's what I mentioned before when I talk about that ascending and descending process that's occurred with us. That's what I'm talking about. You're going back up this ladder. Now, what makes it different is this. When you make that kind of ascension, and you master what we call matter, your body does not have to go through that whole decay process as we are programmed to believe, and then we expire. We literally expire like a program expires. We don't go through that because you have moved into a space where you get it and you begin to understand how the streams of energy work and how it all is intertwined and how the body has the ability to molecularly shift. It actually can do that. It actually can shift, and it's gradually moving. This isn't something that necessarily happens overnight where all of a sudden, you know, you get up and, you know, it might happen that way, but it is a gradual transformation that is occurring, which means that as we go along, we could expand into another space, another point in time, which could be a reality where, for example, just I'm using this as an example, where it's pure sound or it's pure light. Well, the body just simply transitions into taking on a body that would be suited for that space and time, just as this physical body was created to be able to operate within the gaseous laws of this reality. Your body is simply shifting. That's the reason why some of the yogis, you see, they're able to meditate or they're able to pull an apple out of thin air. Just so many things that you see that is a possibility. You know, the whole idea of teleportation. All of those things are showing how the body can move when we start to shift beyond the concept of time and space. When we start to shift beyond the concept of time and space as well, we start to move outside of quantifying time, but you are simply there. Wherever there is, you are simply there. And in that there, you are wearing the form. You know, the body moves into light or sound or, like I said, whatever that environment, you know, requires. But that's all based on one's consciousness. One's consciousness is doing the traveling. Consciousness is awareness. So when we move into these heightened levels of awareness, then the body follows suit. The way we have been taught to operate is the body is insignificant and does not matter. So what we want to do is we want to be spiritual, but we are ready to shed the body. What I have said time and time again is human beings, according to the timeline here and how we evaluate time, human beings don't live long enough to have the kind of evolution and expansion and awareness, awakening, essential to take us, you know, beyond the limited aspect of the game.
Unless they have an ascension experience.
Well, the ascension experience, but you're living long enough to go to gradually move into this ascending process. This is daily. You know, as you are growing, as I said earlier, when you are stuck in a pattern, you're not growing. You're not going through a major enough growth. But as we are growing expansively, I'm talking deep levels of growth, you're gradually shifting. Your body's coming along with wherever the consciousness can dare to travel. That's all I'm saying. And that is the ongoing ascension until, yes, you are able to really begin to do all these various things where time and space, you're no longer bound by time, space, and the idea of gravity. And we are in the next moment of whatever here is, whatever that moment is, undefined. You are in that space that one's consciousness is able to take you to. That is how you're ascending. You're ascending back up that ladder. The spin in your body, the vibration is escalating. As opposed to the slow spin that the body operates based on, which is the Hertz field that we operate in. So we're actually moving to higher, to greater levels of spin in the vibration of our body, and that again is based on the consciousness that's allowing the body to come along with the shift in consciousness. But the vibration of the body has to change. That's how you begin to be able to move into those pockets of time.
Well,
just like
now,
the fan,
everything is moving
the fan.
Then. Now, it's not just us. It's every being in it. Much of the consciousness community is hanging on to the worship of entities that are no longer in a position of governance over the ascension process of this reality.
Nope.
Why is that?
Why are they no longer in charge of it?
Yeah, because are they moving too?
Well, that's part of the fear too. Yes, they have an opportunity to go through an evolution, whether they're evolving or not. The only reason why you would want to hold anyone down is if you are not necessarily going to go through an evolution. Maybe it's because they are also stuck in their own mindset and need for human beings to continue to be in that certain level of thinking to continue to support where they're thinking. I think that there are many of these beings that are stuck in their own perception as well. But remember now that as we go through these cycles, you know, because as we mentioned in the very beginning, there are various cycles that exist, and every cycle has a theme. So all of these cycles are bringing with it all these various, and I missed my point again, all these various, all these various changes, all these various themes, and there was something else I was going to tell you, and it just went out of my mind again. And this
we were talking about the beings that the consciousness community worships as these beings. They're no longer in position.
Right. There was a point where they were, because that's the game. That's just the way this is. There's a point where certain aspects of what was worshipped, who was worshipped, that was just all part of the experience. And then as you go along, the transition happens, the change happens, and they are not part of that. Well, maybe it is that human beings are in a space now, a state, or will be moving into a level where one has the opportunity to start to own yourself, to start to shift away from this externalizing and this outside worship of entities. Maybe that is what is happening in this cycle coming up. But the programming is so strong that it's very challenging for us to want to see that, because we can't figure out how we could get along on our own without these beings, and these beings continue to help us to think that way. Case in point, when you go and you look at the information by that they've channeled and they keep putting out on Lord Maitreya and Sanat Kimura and I forgot who these other ones are, but these are the more of the bigger ones. When you look at the channeled information, you begin to see more of or hear what they're saying. They're saying that these are offices. If you go and you research, you will see that they are talking about the Christ as an office and overseers of the planet, of who's taking over at this time. This whole thing is set up just like the corporations are set up. They're forces that are structured in that manner. You know, this one reports to the other and so on and so forth. But when you go and look, this is what is being taught to some to many of the people who gravitate to this kind of information. This is how it's set up. They really do believe, that it's a changing of the guard. So now Lord Maitreya, I believe, is supposed to be the one to, if I remember correctly, he's supposed to be the one in charge and coming back to take care of things. It's not Jesus per se anymore. That, you know, that was just part of it, and then you've got him, and then other people that feel that they're appointed by this office. They have a connection. They're appointed by this office, or these officers and given certain positions with the running of the planet. This stuff is like run like a business or some kind of corporate organization, and it sounds crazy, but you know, you start really digging into it, and you start looking at it, you're going to see that this is the mindset. This is running through everything, whether it be Freemasonry and what they think and who they report to and what they think is going to happen. Everybody is trying to do everything based on what their religious belief system says.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't believe what they believe, well, that's just too bad for you.
Exactly. You need to be gone from the planet because, you know, yeah. But it's true. And so you see this whole setup. But no. The New Age movement definitely was able to usher in a lot of people. And I think the reason is because people were really in a state of want of questioning and wanting more. And that came in at a time. I think that it was a wonderful thing that happened in the sense of really waking up people to certain realizations that they didn't have before. But I think a lot of people got trapped in a certain mindset with it and ended up once again prey to something else outside of themselves.
Well, so everything is in motion in all dimensions, in all sides. Even the ascended masters, or the higher guides, or the minor gods or angels to whom we have prayed or recited various bead-driven prayers, are perhaps not there anymore. There's nobody there to listen. So. Maybe they've been replaced, and maybe, just maybe, we're becoming aware of our own godhood inside of us, and we realize that we are our own judges, and we judge ourselves instantly by the energy level that we maintain by our own choice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interesting thing you say in the book, you say, there were several rays, and you slash this with the word race, rays like sun rays and race of beings, who were the first to inhabit the planet. Ray represents the vibration of color, light, and sound. Each race, therefore, represents a signature frequency, all emerging from the one to the original concept of the dream. Their existence was not always in physical bodies, but in the form of light, etc. Are we talking about light beings? Are we talking about orbs here?
I think it could be either or. I really think it could be either or. I think that was the original way in which that we began to explore this reality, the possibility of this reality. And eventually began to move into a different kind of spectrum in terms of taking on the physical form for this level of experience. But yeah, I think that's how we existed before, in one of those two forms. Excuse me. And so it was a completely different experience because. From those levels, these bodies, first of all, allow us to judge. It's, you know, it's a polarized system, and it allows you to have a completely different kind of experience. And in those kinds of forms, you don't have the same kind of interactive experience that you do here, so that would have been limited to that, to what you were in that form. But what's interesting is that you went from that form all the way to this form, so that means you had all of those other experiences and have them all encoded in you. That's, you know, that's how you can access everything, because even from the form of whether they're in light bodies or orbs, what were they before that? just as the latter, I named out the electromagnetic spectrum of color, light, and sound, and beyond any of those spectrums. You know, what were you before you were what you were before you were what you were before? You're carrying all of the encoding somewhere in you of all of what you are ultimately, and as well as your ride, your journey all the way down to this slow level timeline. And to me, that is very, very significant in one saying, well, you know, how do you know all of this? How can you? Well, how can you not have access to it? It is your birthright. You are already all of those things that you're looking for anyway. You know, it's just that now, it's just where you are, it makes it challenging because we are in bodies that are designed where you forget so that you can have the experience, because if you remembered everything to have the experience, you couldn't have the experience. There would be no point in even being here. So you have to not remember all of what you were in order to do all of the fun stuff here and you know, what we call insane stuff, all of it, and then begin to remember who you are, and then you start to transcend away from some of those actions that you may have engaged in or normally would have engaged in. You start to move in a completely different direction, and, you know, of course, the ego becomes something completely different, not the way it's been. We've utilized it in order to, you know, to have the experience. So, and the other thing I wanted to say is that I use on the back of the book, I talk about, like, the single cell of a plant. Our history is encoded in, you know, in us. And we have to remember, if you cut a sliver from a plant, you know, that little teeny sliver, no matter how tiny it is, it carries all of the information of the entire plant. You know, what I don't see why it's so challenging for even a scientist to say to me, well, how would you even know that? You know, it's like, because you actually confirm that I should know this. You know, so I'm looking at what they discover, and I'm looking at, well, how can't you see what you already have confirmed and discovered? How can you say it for this thing? And you say we're made up of stardust, and you say everything is connected, but at the same time, even though everything is connected, you can't possibly understand any of the sciences here. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. So I say everyone has that capability, and everyone has that opportunity to begin to discover deeper and deeper levels of what creation is and what they are. It's just obviously there, scientifically there. You listen to Nassim Harriman, who I've interviewed a number of times, and he also talks about the pulsation process, but there was something else I was going to tell you, but I can't remember the term that he used. But, you know, ultimately what he is talking about shows you how everything folds in on itself. But what I say, yes, it's us that's folding in on ourselves. We are that substance that makes everything happen, that makes creation move, that makes the black hole and the white holes and the star in the sky. Yet we've turned it around, and it's a paradox, and it's also ironic at the same time. We turn it around where we now think that it all runs us, but ultimately we really run it. We've just set it up to run us. So, you know, it's a fascinating game and process. Very fascinating.
Well, and you know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to realize, oh my gosh, is this all an illusion? None of this counts. I mean, all this that I'm going through, everything that I spend my energy on or think about or dream about or try to build, you mean it doesn't mean anything? That's not what we're saying at all, is it?
Well, that's the thing, though. We're not saying that, but then there's that point where you come to that space where you realize that, but then at the same time, you know, you go back to, okay, well, we say, okay, none of it is real and it is an illusion, but yet at the same time, then you go, well, what does the word real mean? So all of it is valid. It's just that we have to wake up to the realization that we created this virtual game, virtual experience, and yes, on one end, none of it is real. It's all made up. Everything about our lives is just all made up. And in the end, all that it means is what we gathered from our interaction with every moment and aspect of what we thought was real. In the people, everything. And that's what we step away with. That's really what we have. That's what we're gathering.
But we're not, you know, out in the middle of space just going through this. You say in your book, the illusion of separateness became the eyes through which humanity would now perceive life. Are we really separated?
We're not. I mean, we are on one level. We are, but we're not. We can't be separated. But the way everything has been set up to operate is that there's a fracturization in order for each of us or to break off to have the experience. Because once again, if we remembered all of the wholeness of everything, it would completely change the course of what we experience. And creation, obviously, is wanting any and all things. Anything that could be a possibility has been experienced at some given point in time, somewhere, somehow.
It is the potential of all potentialities.
Exactly. Okay. Every potential. That's all it is. It's an ocean of potentials. So we had to have that illusion of fracturization, because that's all it is an illusion. We can't be separate from any of it. It's all one, but we have the illusion of being separate in order to go through and have the experience that we're experiencing. So yeah, it's once again, yes, the idea of what's real and what's not real. But so when people do get to that point, though, now there are people that consider themselves to be, you know, quite advanced and evolved, and their egos are really interesting in this game. I see it all just everywhere. They're so, I was like, oh, we're so evolved, we're so, and that's when I'm thinking, yeah. Oh boy, you're in for a ride.
Yeah, I've met a few of those myself too, and even saw one in the mirror one time.
Oh yeah. Well, we've all been in that space where we think that we are here, we're special, and we're here to save everyone. I mean, I went through that. That's part of the journey. You go through that when you wake up and you really think that you have a mission to get out there and save everyone. And what I found so funny is that I've often said the only reason why I'm able to do any of what I do now in terms of getting out there with my book and talking, 5 years ago, there's no way I could do it. I wasn't ready. You know why? My ego would have been so in the way. I would have been so worried about how people were going to perceive me.
I know what you mean.
How I looked. Yeah. Are they going to like my book? But one day, when I said to myself, I said, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready now because I get it. I don't care how people perceive me, and nobody needs my book. That's the first thing you've got to get. Get it through your head that nobody needs anything you have. Because if you have it in your head that you have the book to save humanity, boy, you're in for a ride. Now, if people gravitate to what you have written, because you really do everything you do for you, no matter how we fool ourselves, whatever we do for us. Even when we do for other people, it makes us feel good. So when I looked at that and I thought, okay, well, I'm really going to release this book now because it's going to allow me to go to even another level of understanding all of this. So this is just another phase and the ending and the beginning of a cycle for me. That's why I'm releasing the book. And that was really my reason. I didn't know how people would take it. It didn't matter. And then I'd been beat up enough by life, and I felt like I'd been led to walk down the street naked, and everybody had seen me naked is how I felt. So I'm like, okay, now you're ready. Because now... You had your butt kicked enough, you have no shame left, so now you're ready. And that's really how I get out there and I do what I do, because it doesn't matter. You don't need anything I'm saying, you don't have to believe anything I'm saying, and once I got that, I was okay.
Yeah, exactly right. You were able to exhale, you were able to release all of that.
Oh yeah, take the pressure off.
Yeah, we have about 15 minutes left in the program. We'll go ahead and open the phone lines up, 415-762-1161, those that want to call in and ask Sonia a question, 415-762-1161. We have a lot of listeners on right now, and they've just been, like me, just sitting here listening to you for 3 hours, which is really, I think, the fastest 3 hours in internet radio because it goes so quickly.
Right. Yes, it does.
You had an interesting term in your book. It says, stepping forth and desiring sovereignty can be compared to having the training wheels removed from your bike and perhaps walking a tightrope without the net below you. The term stepping in, I saw a movie once called Being John Malkovich.
Oh, yeah.
In this movie, this puppeteer had learned how to slide into John Malkovich's head and actually look out of his eyes. And for some period in the movie, even takes control of John Malkovich's life. But the point is that when he first, you know, experienced it, it was like looking through the eyes of a mask from 3 feet back. You could kind of get a view of what was going on out there through the little eye holes. But it wasn't until he actually stepped up to the mask where his eyes actually became John Malkovich's eyes that everything came into focus. And we do this as humans. When we're born, when we're little, we're all about ego. We're all about eating right now. We're all about sleeping right now. And we're all about instant gratification. If we don't get it, then our parents are going to pay for it by trying to console a crying child. But at some point in life, and I don't know if it's before or after adolescence, some people never do it. But at some point in life, beings step in and they stop being this ego tyrant throwing tirades up and down the aisles of the church, and they become a human being, sovereign and self-aware. That process of stepping in, what does that mean? Before we answer that, Frank is on line one. Frank, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Welcome.
Great. Hi, Sonia.
Hello there, Frank.
My question is, in around November, I saw a video, and it said how to feel your chi in like 30 seconds. And I felt this thing with my hands that felt magnetic, and it blew my mind. And I did it to my brother, my cousin, and my friend, and they didn't feel it when I first did it to them. And then I took a Qigong class, and then I felt it a little stronger. And then I met this girl who was very sensitive, and she introduced me to a metaphysical church and all this other healing stuff. And mainly is that from November to now, my whole world is like open up to consciousness and all this stuff. And one of the things that I think is that I would like to learn more. And I think that having an outer body experience, because I read somewhere that there was a lady, I think her name was Marilyn Hughes, where she said that she would have outer body experiences and she would call her spirit guide, and her spirit guide would act like a tour guide to show her places and things, so this way you don't just wander around. And you said that you were able to have an outer body experience just by meditating on it?
Yeah, but I wasn't, for me, I wasn't aiming at a particular, I want to have an out-of-body experience. I had an objective I wanted to know. I wanted to understand, so I didn't know how it was going to unfold, and then it just all started to happen in that manner where I was moving now beyond, you know, time and space as we know it. But what I want to say to you, Frank, is what I say to everybody else. You see what you're doing right now is fracturing yourself, and what will happen is you are going to focus your aim on trying to have an out-of-body experience. What you have to do is you have to move into what it is that I want to really achieve. What is it? Is it knowledge? You have to find a point of what you want, and then you start to trust, allow the process to come about in terms of how that knowledge is going to unfold in you. Otherwise, we set ourselves up for experiences that can be extremely challenging, because if you start to force having an out-of-body experience, or you think that's the only way, you begin to limit your way and your perception and the possibilities of how you will engage in greater levels of knowledge. And that was something that I did not do. I didn't have any preconceived anything. I knew what I wanted. I wanted knowledge. That was just the bottom line for me. And I think that's what we have to learn, is what do we want in the end? It's what we want in the end. We want to understand. I trust the greater aspect of me. Show me how. But don't just limit it to what other people have done. And they're always going to run around and do 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 different practices trying to do this thing. That's what I would say.
Well, ultimately, knowledge is what I want to learn. And
mm-hmm.
But so what do you recommend? Just meditating on that?
What I recommend is get in touch with yourself, and meditation is one, is a great way to do that. Everybody's concept of how meditation works is very different, because I did it from such a raw, untrained, and I'm so glad I did it that way. I didn't have any preconceived ideas of meditation. However, I sat on the floor in the lotus position, and over a period of time, I started to breathe. You know, it just came to me. But my desire, I allowed my desire to be the guiding force that led me to whatever the next thing was. And then my hands started to move, and then the energy filled me, and it went like that. And until I was like a child in a candy store, and I started to do this many different, you know, every day I was doing it, and getting stronger and more confident with it. So what I'm saying to you is, more than having to ask 5-6 people how to meditate, if you really want to get this, start to spend time with yourself and start to feel that, start to allow that process to take place. That's what I'm saying. Go into, do your meditation, but allow the meditation to flow. I also have a CD that I did do because people kept asking, and I didn't want people to be stuck in any one thing, because I'm just so not for it. But I basically created it off of what I had done before, and it says on there, do not get stuck on this. Learn how to move off of this, but it gives you like a starting point, basically how I did it. But that's what I would say, is to do that, to do it that way.
And can I get that off your website, Spirit Inform?
Yes, it's on spiritinform.com. And you just click on where it says the store, and it'll say meditation. And you can download it immediately from the site. So you can get the hard copy, or you can download it.
Okay. And you mentioned stuff, you were talking about food before, and I've had this thing where I don't want to eat meat, but I desire it, and I know that you were saying that we, you know, we eat for health and we eat for the pleasure, and the concept of eating meat bothers me, to have to kill something to eat it, but yet I desire it, and I don't. Does it have anything to do with just the density of the food, and it prevents, you from raising your vibration, or what do you recommend?
You're saying in terms of meat, of you eating meat, or are you talking just food overall? Well, it's a combination of things, as I said earlier. It has to do with you, where you are in your understanding, as well as, yes, the food can, you know, create a tremendous amount of acidity in the body. But at the same time, again, it depends on where we are in our understanding. If somebody is very depressed or stressed out, what they eat will have a greater traumatic effect on their body as opposed to somebody who is upbeat and happy, as the body is able to not lose so much energy trying to keep the person basically going, emotionally going, and process the foods as well. Now, what I would say to you is you have to look at why, you know, what are your feelings? Why do you feel that way, you know, about eating meat? And I don't necessarily encourage anybody to struggle really hard sometimes at trying to let go certain things. I think you have to plant it there as to why I would like to shift away from it, because you actually can stress yourself out more and put more pressure on the body by trying to stay away from eating something that you so want to eat. It actually has the same effect, because, you know, stress causes acidity. So you have to go easy on yourself, and maybe if you really want to stop eating meat, then you do it gradually. Maybe you'll eat it once a week or whatever the case may be, but you start finding, you know, a way. But more importantly, come to grips with what are your feelings on why you don't want to eat meat. Is it what things that other people are saying, or is it because you honestly in you just don't want to eat it anymore? So that's what I would say. You do what you're doing until you no longer have to struggle so hard to not do it anymore.
Okay.
My way of doing things is a little bit different than other people's, most people's way of doing it. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves, and I think we end up lying to ourselves a lot, and that's what I'm looking at, is people being, you know, being honest as they can with themselves, because you still get the same effect that you're running away from if you're not able to really be honest with yourself.
Okay. And I have one last question. Is something to me rings true about just looking inward and only relying on yourself to do this, and no, like, outward technology, like the hollow sink kind of stuff. But
right.
Then I see things like Kunlun Negong, where there's an attunement that gets passed on you, and they say that 99% of enlightenment is clearing, and that this process of clearing helps raise your vibration, and so that when you get this attunement, it helps you achieve that more, or faster, or easier. And then there's other things like Reiki and IET, and when you get those attunements and you practice that it helps clear you more for the same purpose of clearing, and by the process of clearing, then things open up and you raise your vibration. What are your views on that?
Well, I think you have to go with what you're resonating with at that moment. I think things like Tai Chi or Qigong, that's you operating yourself. That's you moving energy through. You're the one doing all of that, and I think they're wonderful disciplines. However, we don't want to limit our expansion to, you know, any one discipline. For example, you're doing that, and then you think that that's the thing that's going to really get you going. No, these are all just tools. These are all tools for the body and your consciousness, actually your awareness, is really the most significant part here. But this helps to keep the energy flowing and helps to keep you clear. Now, as far as some of the other practices are concerned, there's things that everybody needs. You know, I can't say that you shouldn't do Reiki or some of these other emotional clearings. I think that we have to do what we need to do. It might not be something for me, but you might need to do this. Now, does that mean that you're going to get stuck on that and then you're going to do that every week you go to a meeting on that? That's a completely different story. After, there's a point where you begin to evolve, you know, from those things. Those things are just tools to help you to be more self-reliant. That's really where your goal should end up being, is becoming more self-reliant, not stuck on the next external practice, one after the other, and people promising to do this for you and that for you. You know, the ultimate goal is to get off of that ride and come into your own. But these are all tools, and there's no good or bad or right or wrong about them. They're just what we need at the moment when we need them, and we just create greater dimension from those things, that those practices. That's all. So whatever feels right for you right now, do it with that intention in mind. Self-realization, self-awareness, self-reliance.
That's good. Frank, I appreciate the phone call. We are completely out of time, about 1 minute over. So I really appreciate
Thank you very much. I appreciate everything.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining us so much. And Tanya, it's been fantastic. My goodness, what a wealth of information you are. The book is The Holographic Canvas. Sonia Barrett has been my guest. Her website is spiritinform.com. It has been my ultimate pleasure to have you on the program. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And thanks to the audience as well, the listening audience.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. You have a great week, and we will be in touch another time.
All right. Thank you so much. You take care.
All right. Good night. All right, Earth Explorers, that is it. I will play my exit, and we will see you next week, next month, on X Squared Radio. I'm Brooks Agnew. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.